Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm George Chen, and this is SupDoc, where we discuss our favorite documentaries with comedians, filmmakers, and musicians. Today, we're talking about Theory of Obscurity, a film about the residents, directed by Don Hardy Jr. This 2015 film peels back some of the mysterious layers surrounding the San Francisco experimental music entity that's been churning out bizarre and uncompromising albums for over 40 years. And my guest is Conan Neutron, a musician and scene organizer behind Victorine Associates, Mount Vicious, and his most recent project, Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends, with Dale Crover of the Melvins on drums. We discuss his love for the world-making aspects of the residents and finding a home in weird music. You can stream Theory of Obscurity on Amazon. And now, here's Conan Neutron. And we are here at my house with Conan Neutron.
Sir Conan Neutron, if
Sir
you please.
Sir Conan Neutron, who I have not seen in a very long time.
I was trying to think about that.
Yeah, I feel like I ran into
years,
you.
Maybe?
Something I think like that sounds but it's right. Been,
yeah.
I mean, we were both in Oakland for a long time, but...
Oh, yeah, no, that was...
Yeah.
This is known. It just was...
We just weren't at the same things.
Sometimes.
Did you ever go to
sometimes
comedy stuff?
Always.
Did you go to...
Yeah, not as much.
What would you
not
go
as
see?
Much as, not as much as a lot of folks.
You're a music guy, just to clarify.
Predominantly,
we know each other for music.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
it's, yeah. It's, for better or for worse, I'm more of a music guy.
and you're in L.A. right now.
I am, yes.
And I see on Instagram, like, you're hanging out with people. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Because there's, like, I just looked on Instagram, like, Vern from Unwound and, like, David Pajo and you and someone else. Like,
of Zwan fame, yes.
Of Zwan and many other.
That's a joke, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
But, an on-the-nose joke.
Yeah. So and you're in, like, the desert, or what are you doing?
That sounds like an accurate summation of what maybe was seen under the picture. Yes.
So you to say you've been in a bunch of bands, but you've been putting out these records under Conan Neutron and Secret Friends.
Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. I'm actually in town to record the fourth Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends record on Thursday, which Dale Cover from the Melvins plays drums for. And
like he's your regular drummer in this.
Yeah,
band.
Everyone's always like, "Oh, with Dale." I'm like, "They're always with Dale." Yes, 100% of the time, always.
And PR is it PFR PRF?
PRF.
Do you want to explain that a little bit? Because I've never been to one. I know kind of the background, but you're
I'll
one of the main.
The,
are you one of the main? You're like a
West Coast
person.
The West Coast
it?
One, okay, yeah. So the Premier Rock Forum, dumb joke. It's a loose affiliation of freaks, nerds, and weirdos, music obsessives. That was built around a internet forum on Steve Albini's electrical audio message board that kind of developed into its own thing, its own self-policing community that just does cool stuff. So, and the Pier of Barbecue, was the first one of those was just everybody getting together, meeting in person, and like bands playing at with and to each other.
Does Steve go to these?
Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but I mean, it's not a Steve thing though. No, not at all. And that's everyone's like, Steve Albini, all the bands don't like, idiot. And like, it's like to even suggest something like that is just, okay, you obviously don't get it. That's not what it is at all. It's just its own thing.
He's not like it's not his like All Tomorrow's Parties lineups.
No.
It's just the community that's built around the stuff.
If he's not like playing poker or something, he'll show up to the Chicago ones. Mm-hmm. Like he like worked the kitchen one time, you know, but like he's there as it's a no lords situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like not like a top down thing. It's a bottom up sort of weird bizarre communitarian democracy.
Hey, it sounds better than the Fire Festival, you know?
Yeah,
You guys actually made it work. You've been doing shows.
Yeah, it just with the 10-year anniversary just happened.
Okay. I guess we should at some point bring up. Sometimes this show, I need to be reminded of like what the point of the show is.
But the thing is that, you know, whether it's whatever level it's at, I've managed to somehow create this gravitational field to kind of build this world around what I do, which is cool. Like, and it's certainly through no small amount of work, but that's something that when we were talking about documentaries, I wanted to talk about. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about The Residents. Cause if you think about a band that kind of creates a world for themselves, there was no lane for The Residents.
Nope.
There was no like freaking record category for The Residents. No,
still a little wonky.
And their own myth making. I mean, I don't remember talking on Mike or not about Artie Fox passing away and like kind of.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, like that's new. That's recent news.
Since the documentary came out.
Yeah,
but I always so there's two. I find The Residents inspiring on multiple levels. One of which is just having the gumption to sort of just, we're going to do our thing. It doesn't fit these other things and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just having the like sort of naive confidence that comes from, you know, without like lack of technical aptitude or like just context of it, just being so involved in that world.
Yeah.
I actually think that's really inheriting. It's almost like half Japanese the same sort of way at a much lesser level.
Has a great documentary about them.
I have not seen that one, but yeah. I agree. But I got a lot of time for anything like that. Like the Henry Darger.
Oh yeah. About, in the realm of
some shit.
Some fucking shit. The Darger shit.
But it's a beautiful story.
No, yeah, yeah.
And Amargosa, the Amargosa Opera House. That's another one where it's like this like on this rock I shall build my church. Yeah, that like mindset is like always been appealing to me.
Did you see the Jandek documentary?
I did not.
Because this reminds me, I mean, okay, so we're talking about
Theory of Obscurity.
Theory of Obscurity, yeah. 2015 Don Hardy Jr. film, which I actually saw at the SF International Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
Like we started this show, and then we got passes to the International Film Festival.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, I gotta check this out too. So I
was the show a delivery system for getting free stuff.
You know. Most of it's I pay for Netflix, so right, I would say no. I mean,
I can tell there's legitimate love for the form.
We're getting some advanced screeners, but like by the way that we schedule our show, it's like by the time we talk about something, it's like it's not an advanced screener anymore.
Right,
it's like widely available.
Yeah.
International Film Festival, they had a panel, and Homer was there for sure, and he's the only guy I've seen at events connected to Residents things.
Yeah.
Like, I went to a thing, it's Stranded, when Superior Viaduct put out the Santa Dog 7-inch reissue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he was there. Yeah. I don't think anyone else in the film I've seen as an affiliated person of
it's hard to tell
world.
Because
it's
I mean
hard to know.
Well, and the whole thing,
even the main guy with the mask and who's doing most of the vocals in this.
Yeah.
Do you know who that is?
It's still unclear. It's to me
he's got a little stubble it's like 2012, 13.
I think that's probably Hardy Fox. Frankly.
That's what I was thinking.
I think the documentary is what finally kind of led me to down that path because well, first of all, if you listen to it, he's got a little bit of a twang.
Little twang. His body type is like
his
slightly
body type's
different
about the same.
Than Homer.
Yeah.
So, sure what Homer plays, but.
I mean, it doesn't matter because things like Eskimo play on an instrument that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what comes out. It's like this like warp genius of a,
and
you know,
now like
borderline unlistenable to some people and like the best thing ever to other people.
Right.
Maybe
I mean,
in the same room,
like let's how far should we backtrack, assuming that someone listening to this has
never
heard The Residents. And then we can, I mean, I would say I'm not like a huge fan. I've picked up a few things here
that
and there.
That actually surprises me.
Yeah. You know,
DJ Rimmel am a huge fan, and that surprises people too. I'm like, they're like one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah. You know, it's I kind of put them in a league with like a band that I conceptually like the idea.
You respect them maybe more than
Diggum. Yeah, I respect them. I would say it's sort of like, I was reading about like the Fugs, and I'm like, oh, I got to check out the Fugs. And then I'm like, I don't think I need to listen to the Fugs. I'm glad the Fugs were there.
The dude in the Big Lebowski. Yeah, you're so glad he's out there doing his thing.
Well, it's interesting because you wouldn't know, other than watching this film, like because you don't know how old these guys are, and they are really connected to Summer of Love, like, which was surprising.
So, yes. So there's two very important points there. First of which is that for people that somehow don't know who the Residents are, the thing about them is they're like the ultimate image band, but not the ultimate artist band, because the artist itself, the identity of the artists.
What do you mean by that?
Okay. So the identity of the artists themselves is obscured. Like, nobody knows who they are. They speak of themselves
officially,
in third person. There's like all these missives that refer to them as these, you know, and like they've just maintained this shtick for
40
decades,
years
and decades and decades
at least
and decades.
40 years.
And in a way that frankly you would not be able to do now. There would be no way.
Like, no way.
There's no chance. This will never happen again. Mm-hmm. And because they maintain the secret identities, there's been people that have come in and come out.
Right.
You know, it's very clear within the documentary, like about when Mole Show happened, like John Kennedy took off, president of the Crypto Corporation. Why was he the president? Because his name was John Kennedy.
Yes.
Love that moment.
Yeah.
And
it's a fun documentary, personally. You'll learn a lot if you've never even heard of the Residents.
I don't think you need to know anything about them.
I don't think you need to.
But the thing about them is, like, they elevated the identity of these mysterious entities. Mm-hmm. Basically, they took being this obscure group of people from Shreveport, Louisiana, like, making this, like, hellacious racket, but thinking it's, like, the best thing that's ever been at the same time, and decided that them not being known is going to be something they were going to lean into. They were going to lean into that strength and make that the thing, to the point that they even recorded a record that they didn't release specifically. They were specifically recorded it not to release it. That's not available. That's the name of the record. Not available.
Is it Warner Brothers?
They finally end up releasing it like whatever 15 years later. Mm-hmm. But they just do weird conceptual stuff like that, and it's not that they thought themselves as a band so much as like an art thing.
Yeah,
like the visual components. They're one of the first ones to do CD-ROMs. They were doing like a Hi-8. They were doing video, like everything. And people, you know, that listen to this now may not have the context, but like there was a time when you couldn't just like make a movie on your phone.
But they were, it sounds like they actually did sell a lot of records in the beginning.
They did.
That's the shocking part of it.
Because they made this world for themselves that for other people that felt like they were left out or that they were not part of like the narrative of, you know, maybe the Summer of Love wasn't like dark and evil enough and weird for them, or that like they didn't, you know, like the freaks for the freaky parts of the freaks, nerds, and weirdos. Mm-hmm. They engendered this philosophy with this shameless mercantile attitude, like buy or die was the motto, and they just put out these weird limited edition things that people just buy the hell out of and then like trade and sell later. And like this is years before, I mean everybody does that now, but like that was nobody sort of like was doing
fan,
that then.
The fan club kind of mentality somewhere,
right? But with unique, like this is recording only will be released in this format ever and then it's gone, like super unique. And it built them. And as well as with their music, which we'll just go ahead and say was very idiosyncratic, and oftentimes, frankly, unlistenable, but sometimes beautiful. And like a lot of people like will lean into the unlistenable part. They did a record called The Commercial Album, and The Commercial Album is all a bunch of 1 minute songs specifically that they wrote as 1 minute songs so they could play as ads during AM radio, because it's the only way that they could get on the air. Beautiful. And it's some of their best stuff. It's fantastic. And this is the idea of pop music deconstructed down to just its barest essentials. It's amazing. And it's something that But they just couldn't, nobody was playing their stuff on the radio. So like, oh, I know how we can get on the radio. We'll buy a bunch of like cheap airtime and AM radio.
What's weird that they were big on MTV, which is surprising.
And that comes back to the visuals. Yeah. Because at the time, there weren't a lot of bands doing visuals at all. And they were already had been making movies and videos and things for years. So it actually suited them well in this very brief, weird moment of time that allowed them greater access to like a bigger audience. And the fact a lot of that stuff's in like the MoMA now and like these different museums and things like that. But it wasn't, I mean, they kind of considered themselves like a multimedia enterprise. They're like filmmakers that were involved. Like their shows were like plays almost.
I wrote down the quote that they sort of viewed themselves as failed filmmakers.
Right.
Like that was really the medium that they wanted to do. They're just like, is cheaper.
Yeah. That's basically, a lot of them was like fiscally minded, right? Yeah. And they did things where Vinylless Fats, which never really, they go into like the whys and wherefores, but there's this crazy ass movie, like kind of almost Forbidden Zone looking.
The set designs are really cool and all
beautiful
this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a thing that has always been a big factor with the residents is naivete. And I think that's a lot of the charm of their early stuff. But when they were doing Boundless Fats, nobody told them you couldn't put it in a movie theater. Once they found out that they would never be able to do anything with this except gather a bunch of friends around their living room to watch it, they kind of lost a certain level of enthusiasm and momentum towards it.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Oh, now knowing that you're such the fan and you lived in the Bay Area for a long time, did you end up overlapping at all with this world? Or...
Not really, only as a fan. I mean, okay. I saw them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I saw them like 8 or 9 times over the over the years. Well, let's put it this way: if I did, I didn't know.
Right.
Like I know someone.
I know
that
where
I'm
they
pretty
practiced.
Sure played. Yeah, I, and I know.
You did
I know.
Know about
I know someone that.
That
I'm pretty sure I know that someone that played in the live band at one point.
Yeah.
But he wasn't telling me nothing.
They practiced down the hall from where Piafra practices, or used to practice anyway.
I also kind of didn't want to know. Like it's almost not important because. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, it's Bono, it's Eddie Van Halen. It's like, no, they're just going to be like some regular dudes. You would never look at twice at the grocery store. And that's what makes it beautiful to me. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so interesting to me is that these are people that basically created superhero identities for themselves by making a lack of identity. Like, there's no part of that that makes sense. None. 0.0%. Mm-hmm. But they managed to carve out this subsection of a subculture of these other people that just didn't realize they needed this place to belong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to me is what's so powerful.
So
about
how
their
young
story.
Were you when that kind of like hit you or like where you were introduced to this world?
14, 15.
Really?
Along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it because of Primus? Did you have?
No, I worked at a record store. I didn't know Primus covered their songs until forever. And I knew about Primus independently.
I knew about,
probably knew about Primus first.
Right. Yeah.
Because I lived in Modesto, and there was not even a good record store, let alone.
So you worked in a record store in Modesto, and some older person was like, "You got to check out these."
Well, at that point, I'd already moved up to Oakland, so it was Tower Records. It was like the fourth best record store in Berkeley.
Oh, you worked at the tower on Durant?
I did, yes.
Oh, wow. That was a Leopold's long before that.
Anybody, well, it was before it was in that building. It was when Leopold's was still around.
Right, right, right.
So it was next door to, and I think it's like a raver store or something now. God, but
who even knows?
Yeah, who knows? But it was not a cool record store, but I got to listen to music for free, which is so funny now because you think about it, like everybody can listen to anything for free.
It used to be hard.
But at the time it was like, I have to go to the library to listen to this to see if I want to get it. But I was constantly, that's how I discovered the birthday party. You know, that's how I discovered the Stooges. That's how I discovered like all of my favorite bands was like from working at a record store, including the Residents. And when I first heard it, I was like, I don't know what I just listened to. Like it was just baffling to me. Like, and like the skill level of the musicians seemed to be like rudimentary to functionally retarded. It's okay to say that. I don't even know anymore. Whatever. Yeah. Developmentally disabled.
Write to Conan Neutron.
Yeah. Don't write to George.
At
write to me.
Conan Neutron.
It just everything about it like didn't make sense. So of course I just had to keep listening. I think it was Duckstab I first listened to, and I was like, "What is this?" And I just really just dug into it, and it was like, "I'm gonna crack the code on this." And what I found immediately, it was like, "Okay, so there's some stuff. This band's put out a million things. Some that I like. Some that's god awful." But the stuff that I like is really cool and like just has amazing ideas in it where they're just, you can tell they're just trying stuff. And a lot of it doesn't land. And some of it just lands okay or just lands weird. But they're just trying it. They're just like, they aren't even, they, if there's any doubt in their minds, it certainly isn't present on the records. And that was so inspiring to me. Even as I was sort of, if I'm coming from a very conventional punk rock dude place and like kind of having my mind expanded it's by like, listening to like The Fall and like Gang of Four and stuff like that at the time.
But like, yeah, that's interesting you keyed in, because in that way I think this can, this film can relate to a lot of people that aren't musicians.
Yeah.
It kind of just has to do about like commitment in a way. I think and in a way this whole thing is about committing to the bit.
Yeah, committing to the bit.
As much
for sure
as possible.
Absolutely.
For apparently like losing, what did they do? They went on a tour with 16 people and two bands and lost two original members because of
two of the original people that have been through all this other nonsense. Like, I'm out. We've gone way too far with this.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a perfect I mean, that I think that holds true for people that are in a comedy. I think it holds true for people that like write books. Like anybody that, you know, there's something to be learned there. I'm not saying, like, do, go do what they did.
No, I mean, you couldn't, exactly. But I think, like, what I like, sometimes music documentaries, I wouldn't even know, this is, obviously, it's a music documentary.
It is, ultimately.
But sometimes music documentaries have more to say about just creativity in general. And I think this is kind of more the case in this one.
That's one of the reasons why I zeroed in on it, for that, as you can tell.
I mean, we also did mention that Melvin's doc as a possible thing, which I haven't seen
yet.
But
it's so obvious.
Which seems I can sort of picture it. It's a story of a rock band, right?
It's a better than average documentary. Yeah. And actually, it gives you a window into their world that gives you insight into how they work.
I've seen, like, you know, Buzza, like, do just like talking on YouTube, telling stories. So obviously it'd be entertaining.
It's very entertaining. Yeah. It's cool because they have like Lukens in there and there's total bad blood between them. Like, but then like, you know, Dutrum didn't want to participate. I was like, okay. But but there's so many cool moments like Buzz and Mackie like screen printing the records before they go out on tour and stuff like that. And it's really interesting too because it's a window into their world. But here's why I didn't want to do that one. In some small, like, I'm Pluto in this situation, I'm like a part of their universe.
Right.
So that's too
obvious. You're in a band with Dale.
And Buzz, like, sings on a couple of the songs. And I love those guys to death, but somebody else should do that documentary.
Yeah. Someone else wants to. So
because it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's freaking great.
Okay.
I'm, you know, okay, my part got cut. I don't care. Like,
you were interviewed for it?
Yeah, yeah, like a small part. But, like, but I'm like unabashedly a fan of what they do, but Melvins are another one where they just have built this world. They built this world that has this, that has fans that have a lot of time for what they do. Even if they don't like what the latest thing is, they still have like that, you know, whatever
I would
brand commitment.
Yeah. I've said this to other people. It's like the Melvins career is kind of like
the ideal career in a certain way.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Because they're still doing what they love.
Yeah.
They're still making challenging stuff. Like, there is something worthwhile on every Melvins record.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's like, oh, I only like the, you know, the super slow heavy stuff. Like, well, they've made those definitive records and you can listen to those 1,000 times and they're mm-hmm. still great records. Like, you're going to have to deal with the fact that, like, there's going to be different stuff on here. Mm-hmm. And if you are willing to walk into it with an open mind and think of them as more than just that one thing, then it's going to be a fantastic experience. Because what you're getting is like, oh, that's good. That's like a good record. Like, yeah. I would enjoy listening. And like, yeah, that's also the same band that made Stag and Stoner Witch and Bullhead and Ozma. And those are great records as well. But you can have both those ideas exist simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very inspiring to me, much in the same way you can have this art movement that acts as a band, like the Residents, mm-hmm. that also has some pretty rad, super psyche tunes.
It's kind of hard to like really compare the Residents to other, like you say, art bands. Like, you know, like what
it
is,
doesn't hit the same.
You know, it's interesting because Jerry Casale is interviewed in here, and he talks about how like basically he's like, I wish Devo had stayed more like the Residents.
Because they started the same way with, had like films and they had more
really
of like a multimedia
conceptual
element. Yeah,
super
stuff. High concept, yeah.
And then they just basically, they were good at writing like hits, you know?
And they became a weird rock band that, you know, inspired generations of other weirdos.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, Devo's like, it was basically a rock band at home.
Right. Devo's like the very successful, like, and I don't know that the Residents could have decided to become a Devo, but Devo could have decided to become
a
Resident.
Yeah, Devo could have been the Residents. I don't think the Residents could have been
Residents.
And that's one of the reasons why I have a lot of time for that just incredibly open-hearted, sincere weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's just like, it's not like it's a calculated move.
Mm-hmm.
It's not they're like, hey guys, I got a great idea. First of all, it's...
You guys like paper mache?
Yeah.
I mean,
how do you like the idea of not ever getting props for any of your musicianship for the rest of your life? Cool.
Oh my God. Did you ever fuck with like Carolina or Rubber House?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the next generation that's clearly inspired by this. But like even more like DIY.
Yeah. And I dig that stuff too. But for me, there isn't anything quite like the Residents.
No,
and
I mean, say that it's gothier in a way. It's like, it kind of has a goth, like the fan base is a little gothier.
And it's weird how that works too, because, well, and they do a good job of showing like in Theory of Obscurity at the live shows of the Residents. It's like not just a bunch of like old hippie burnouts. It's like all different mm-hmm. kinds of people. And there's people that like probably don't go to see other shows that mm-hmm. come see the Residents or came to see the Residents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, again, harkening back to the world building piece of it, where you have this place that you make that people didn't know they needed yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that, like I said, that's, I got a lot of time for that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, I mean, you'd have to pay me to listen to some of the Residents records, right? But like some of them are some of my favorite of all time too. So, and it's like, this is the ultimately the same band. And even the ones where it's like, okay, God in Three Persons is like, it's like when I read The Exegesis by Philip K. Dick, I'm like, oh my God, this is good, but oh, this is hurting my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's things like that where I wouldn't even bothered if it had not been a band that I knew I could like, okay, you've bought some goodwill
mm-hmm.
for me. Like I just have, I have a lot of time for them and a lot of love for them, even if I don't love all of the output.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's rarer and rarer these days, where it's more just like you're as good as whatever the last thing you did was.
Yeah, I don't know how... the things you were saying about like now you couldn't be purely anonymous. I think there's like some black metal dudes that try to do that. But
yeah, it was a ghost.
You're not gonna... It's not really gonna fly quite as easily. And I you know, I would say Jandek is the other one that you'd really...
Somehow Jandek's managed to...
Jandek is... People know who Jandek is now, but he kind of does the same thing as like, oh, there's Corewood, the way there's Cryptic Corporation. Like,
yeah, like there's...
like, I'm the representative of...
these different layers and like...
And,
like, we just throw up enough dust that like people are like, I don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's too much nonsense to wade through.
I mean, it's like, at a certain point, I'm thinking of like this... There's like, obviously, there's this band that I knew of as just like, their symbol was an upside down cross. And that's all I really knew about those guys. But the guy, then I just Googled it and I figured out who the guy was. He like lives in Berlin or something.
Okay.
It's like, oh
is
man.
That crosses? Is
no, that no, no. It's or? Just, it's a glacial ghost, I guess. If you okay. Google glacial ghost.
But that's his symbol. It's like an upside down cross.
It's an upside down cross. And I have the CD. I'm like, oh, this is like really, I like how I can't Google this. You know,
yeah,
like I like the like ungoogleability. Totally
ungoogleable.
I mean, you know, to the point like I did a record with like Chick 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 back when that was like hard to spell.
Yeah.
And you could not.
Whereas
Google
it wasn't
that.
Even Chick Chick. It was just three repetitive sounds.
It was just three exclamation points.
You know, yeah.
So, you know, it was whatever you wanted to call it, but which was I guess that was kind of early Google at that time. But
Yeah,
going to world building. It is funny that how
like the like the champions of that thing. Like whether you want to be in the world or not, you can't disagree with the fact they built a
Is it like LARP? Is it like LARPing? Kind of?
I don't know. It's like an alternate universe.
Can you LARP as a resident? You know, like this.
I mean, in a way, it could be like an I Am Spartacus thing.
I mean, it just the first 5 minutes is just like. Which is a thing you have to do in every music documentary, I guess, has to do this. I'm sure that Brainiac documentary will be the same thing. The first 10 minutes is just like, they should have been bigger than
the world,
God.
Man.
You know?
So cool.
I am looking forward to that Brainiac
documentary. No, I totally am, yeah.
And that was another option for a film we could have done if I had the screener. But we did not. Les Claypool, obviously. Chris Cutler from Henry Cow. That was interesting.
Yeah, right.
Which kind of tied into the thing of them doing a lot better in the UK,
mm-hmm.
just because there was
not
more music press, and more like interest in like Prague.
There was more music press, and like their sort of anti-image was fascinating to them because like the UK music press, especially then, doesn't really exist anymore.
No, not the way it was.
They wanted to pick apart the puzzle, and they would make a puzzle to pick apart because they were bored if there wasn't one. AKA see these like manufactured rivalries.
You have to remember that like basically there were like at least two or three weekly music magazines based out of London, and in America it was like just Rolling Stone, which was like bi-weekly at some point. I think it was like
at its biggest run. I think that
like
might have been
bi-weekly,
right.
So it was just the volume of stuff that needed to get filled.
Yeah. Anything where you could easily just write a story and especially have like a picture of some weird visual, like a dude with, this is the first time we mentioned it, but an eyeball with a top hat on.
Yeah.
They're in.
If you didn't know what we're talking about for the last half hour, the rest is the eyeball with the top hat as popularized by Kesha. On her live stage.
Show. There's a small scene in that in the movie, which
was kind of like the big news around the time this came out, 2015. It's just like, if you don't know, you know, you maybe have seen this on, like, they were going to sue Kesha or something.
What I think so interesting is a lot of people have seen that visual of the resident with the eye, but they don't know where they saw it from. You know, and I think that's so interesting. We talked about Penn Jillette. I mean, Penn Jillette is one of the talking heads, not the band the talking heads, one of the talking heads in the movie. And he literally went on tour with them as like this MC character. And he's also in, and this wasn't in the movie, but he's like the host of the, during the commercial album era, they made a video called 1 Minute Movies, which was just the video piece of it. And he hosted that, if I remember right. I think Lydia Lunch might be in it too, but it might be.
Did he live in San Francisco?
I'm gonna be mixing up my VHS copies of things I have somewhere in the basement. But
I mean, I was just like trying to piece together if like Penn Jillette actually lived in San Francisco.
He lived in Vegas for a really long time.
He still lives
in
Vegas,
because they have like a show there and stuff.
Yeah, but he also I think produced like this covers album.
Yeah.
Of resident stuff, which is another.
He's one of the more interesting super fans. Matt Groening, Simpsons. Another
big talking head in this film, Matt Groening, who also wrote a biography.
Yeah. Which I forget the name of.
Matt Groening was like a rock journalist kind of early on.
Before he did Life in Hell, which Life in Hell beget The Simpsons and everything else. But yeah, he was a big Residents fan, big Beefheart fan.
Yeah. And he's featured prominently in here.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy in here who, I don't know if you remember, this guy, Joshua Brody. He is one of the, I think he was a touring member.
Yeah.
And he was in Vileness Fats as a guy who is like carrying a plate.
Yeah, and he's the one that like he wanted to meet the one one lady.
Yeah. Oh, her name I wrote her name down here. Irene Dogmatic.
Yeah, and he was like
just Googled.
And he really wanted to like
meet like, Irene Dogmatic. Meet her,
and then like they ended up just like, "Oh yeah, here," like threw him a costume. "Hey, you're in this now."
Yeah, you want to meet her? Come be an extra in our insane student
that
film.
Jupiter like gravitational field of just bringing people into like your world and like creating like a bigger and bigger planet that brings in more people and more things.
So I
see why it appeals to me.
I had a weird interaction with this dude. I mean,
with that guy from the movie.
Yeah, okay. Joshua Brody was. I used to work at this theater in the Mission called The Marsh, and he was like in a show.
Yeah,
he was like the music guy in the show with these people that I guess were like kind of their generation. Like they're slightly younger than the hippies.
Right.
But they were like the San Francisco weirdos kind of of maybe like the same generation as like they're probably in their 60s now or something like that. Yeah.
Contemporaries for them.
So that was weird when I saw this documentary. I'm just like, why do I know who that dude is? Oh yeah, I used to serve him coffee at the Marsh.
How funny.
A lot of weird things have passed through the Marsh, apparently. W. Kamau Bell through the Marsh also.
Yeah.
A lot of people. I also really liked the focus on the graphics and it just ties into the visual style.
Yeah.
There was
incredible. I mean, just like tons of people have ripped that off, like ripped off their visual style in a lot of ways.
And they're saying that the eyeball thing was created for a t-shirt. And they're like, well, I guess our most popular product is a t-shirt and not a record.
I used to have that shirt. Mm-hmm. Like, I think even before I had a Residence record, I had that shirt. Because I was like, oh, that's so cool looking.
Yeah, and Homer was kind of took responsibility for the graphics as well.
Yeah, and then I think that's where it led to. Like, they allude in the documentary to these problems with like money and accounting, and like that's one of the reasons why John Kennedy and the other fellow left after the mole show.
The tour that like bankrupted them essentially.
I can't imagine they were getting crazy money on like mechanical royalties or anything, maybe, but like it seemed like most of that was probably on merch.
You know, it's and the fact that probably that Ralph actually put out a bunch of different bands, which I like.
Tuxedo Moon,
Ronaldo and the Loaf.
Yellow, who had Yellow that huge like hit.
But that hit wasn't on.
It wasn't on
right. That on yeah, right. It wasn't it was, on that.
It was
record.
Later, but they put out Yellow records.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ronaldo and the. I mean, tons of like really Snake Fingers. All the Snake Finger records are
How
great.
How insane would it be if they did put out that the Yellow hit from Ferris Bueller, that was like
they would be a household name,
right? And then
because they would have all the money in the world. Yeah. And then what I just talked about, but that
Yellow is not even a household name.
Jupiter like gravitational field. Yeah. They would have a black hole level gravitational field. They would suck entire universes in. But yeah, that did not happen.
Gary Panter also worked for, he did some graphics for the Ralph Records stuff. And there's
really
a big interview
iconic
with
style.
Gary
really,
Panter
really,
in there, yeah.
Really interesting, kind of like, what's it? The only one I can think of that like, is anything kind of like that is Wrangler Brutes.
Sam McPheeters.
McPheeters.
Yeah.
And it's not the same, but like sort of like,
I think
he's
familiar with Gary Panter and probably with the Residence style as well. Yeah.
Like in a good way of kind of like picking up the torch and running with it.
I mean, I got to say, like the CD-ROM era is bizarre. It doesn't hold up as anything, but it also like is like the ultimate version of it, like the Lawnmower Man aesthetic.
Yeah,
it's how I view it.
Absolutely. So
if you liked Lawnmower Man, you'll probably like the Resident CDR, which is
Freak Show. So it looks goofy as hell.
Did you ever have that
CD-ROM.
Is it still playable to play CD-ROM now?
I don't know.
It's just like, it's kind of like, it has to be like in a Windows Media Player or something like that. It wouldn't even be a Windows player.
No, I think
we're going to talk file. This is a file format show. We should just have why don't we have a podcast just about file formats?
File formats with a Z.
Maybe you and I do a file formats show.
Talk just about like, a niche
you
audience.
Guys, you remember when cassette tapes
VLC
had video
players.
Games on them?
VLC players so good, man. Oh,
I fuck
remember
with VLC.
Winamp
that's
really
what
whipped
use.
The llama's ass.
You know, I never was a big Winamp person, but I'm VLC now. I do VLC now.
VLC's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Well, okay, having nothing to do, I'm just going to bail out.
The residents invented their own media player. Yeah, no,
I had the CD-ROM, I had Freakshow and Bad Day at the Midway, and at the time, you have to understand like the Enhanced Plus CD thing. Like it was them and Poster Children, pretty much the only people I knew doing it, and like it could mean anything. But with them, it was basically a game. Was it a very fun game? No. Was it interesting? Yes. Mm-hmm. But
it was the Bandersnatch of its time.
It was the Bandersnatch of its time. I mean, I understand that's meant to be as a joke, but like it was in the same way that Bandersnatch itself, fantastic A+ conception, B+ execution. Probably the same thing for Bad Day at the Midway and Freakshow. Ultimately,
that should have been one of the options in Bandersnatch. Is like pick up a residence record,
right? That would be
Tomita record.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That guy was a birthday party fan as well.
That was a amazing moment. It was like what? Because that's like one of my favorite bands. I'm like, that's awesome. That's totally awesome. But yeah, as far as them adopting new forms of media. And working with them, like I mean, they were like Devo pioneers in that art form, and also just messing around with new synths and stuff, and like finding new sounds and things along those lines. They were absolutely revolutionary with all that because they were just fearless about trying new stuff. Not all of it lands, but they were fearless about it.
Yeah,
and it's interesting to me that like they did. What's the one? It's like all the Bible stories, but it's like all the messed up Bible stories. I don't think they even get into it in the movie, but like really just weird, cool, like weird thing to focus on, but like it worked out really well. And they focus a lot. My only bitch about the movie is that they focus a lot on the tour, the 2014 tour where Randy, the resident, is like, talking about the old days, this and that.
Yeah,
and
that's almost like that Springsteen on Broadway style thing.
Right, but it's like with this clear character speaking in character, but also kind of telling actual stories too. Like, so it's kind of hitting on two levels at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little conflicted on that piece of it because for me, I think, but coming at it from a fan, like I like having that separation and mystery between it. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about, like these days, art and artist are inseparable. Like you are the art, you are the artist.
You're always representing yourself on social media as well.
And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, that's just the world we live in now. Mm-hmm. And the residents were very much not that. And I almost didn't like seeing
the behind the scenes.
Yeah, like it wasn't like a full dropping of the curtain, but it was like
a lot of Homer in there,
Yeah, and I get where he's like, you know, you're...
You got to make a film. If you're making a film, you kind of like, how do you make this film? I guess
so. How do you make
a movie is how you make a film without having.
Yeah. How do you make a movie about a band and not reveal the band?
Yeah.
Right. Well, OK. So would you get a couple of people talking about it in this weird third person tense?
Yeah.
Which can be confusing or annoying to people. But you also have to be like, OK, you have to realize that the documentary is kind of part of the shtick.
Yeah. I mean, I think
the tiger's part of the shtick.
I saw the film only maybe having seen Homer around and not really fully comprehending what his role was.
Yeah.
But then now watching it again, plus since we've, since the last time I watched it, since I guess the fall, it's Hardy Fox passed away.
Yeah.
And I guess told NPR his whole story before he did.
And I get that sort of like, all right, now's the last chance for me to like get this out and like basically see how people flip out about it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also like,
you kind of, dude, we kind of fair, knew. You know? Yeah, I mean, it's like Deep Throat being revealed.
Right.
I guess.
And it's like, oh, it's just Mark Felt, huh? Okay. Who? All right.
Yeah.
But I understand. But from a perspective of taking the human element out of it, I love the idea of it just being this. You're never really gonna know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's still the case. But just because, like we mentioned way earlier, there's never gonna be another residence. There's gonna be other things that maybe do one or two pieces of that. But I mean, what they pulled off could only have been done of their time. Now, I thought the only part that I really didn't like about the documentary was that, like, they spent even like 2 minutes on the, like, oh, we wanted to go to San Francisco because that's what was happening. We go party, take drugs, woo. Because I just, that's not interesting to me because I don't care about any of that.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of surprising. I mean, I'm like, what drugs were they doing? That's the main question about the residents. I'm like,
probably psychedelics.
What drugs was involved?
Going on a limb here, probably psychedelics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they were landing in San Francisco in 69, I'm like, that's got to be part of the explanation.
But I don't.
But they're from like the South, from the small town in the South. Yeah. And then it has this weird quality of like people I know who do weird music that are from the South.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest shit ever.
Yeah, it's just like out of
like Southern, like it's just like freaking it has its own hothouse quality.
Yeah,
you know?
beamed out from like an alien planet or something. Well, and that's
Right.
I just like the fetishization of drugs as a vehicle for creative for creative exploitation, because I don't feel like drugs make people creative. Mm-hmm. I feel like you can be creative and take drugs and maybe like you get over certain blocks you have for yourself, but the creativity was there. The creativity wasn't caused by the drugs. And I almost feel like it's that same dumb, oh, well, then we took acid and wrote this great song. I was like, well, you always had that great song. It just happened to be that you were on drugs when you realized it
was there. I guess you could sort of say, like, when people look at, like DJ Screw or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's because people were drinking cough syrup and everything sounded better slow.
Yeah.
Or, like, SoundCloud rap has to do with opioids or something. I mean,
it's informed of the sound.
Like, I have a friend who has, like, a theory that there's a connection between those things. But then, like, the residence is a bad trip. It's like a bad trip.
Well, for sure. And
it's not
totally
like a good trip.
Like, it's not like, yeah, it's the other side of like Jefferson Airplane or something where it's just like, it's like, no, this is the bummer side of that. When I say that, I've never taken a psychedelic in my life. I don't care about drugs. Yeah. It's not my thing. Yeah. And I don't like judge those that do, but I get annoyed when people equate creativity with drug use.
I mean, it's just like such was a part of the story of San Francisco in that era.
It would be disingenuous not to tell it, but like, I don't know. Like that was the only part that, and that's my personal, I don't expect anyone else to agree with me except for Ian MacKay, maybe. I don't know.
But I mean, like, I don't do psychedelics, but I see the role that it definitely.
Yeah, they're definitely.
I mean, you can walk down Haight Street.
Yeah.
It's still like someone's still living in 1969, you know?
They've never left. It's a time capsule in the freakiest way. But like, I could have, like, there's so much to tell that I almost could have done with a little less.
That's
of
like
that
the cliche part of it.
Like,
you feel
really?
Like
we
it's just
have
a cliche.
To, yeah, we have to like, we have to do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I would, because there's whole areas like where I'm like, you didn't talk about this record. You didn't talk about this era. Mm-hmm. You didn't talk about like any of this. And it's like, okay, but you can't, you're not going to be able to please everybody. On it. And I did like that they included stuff like them being in the museum and stuff, and where it's like a fridge.
Oh, yeah. The fridge. We didn't talk about the MoMA. There's a fridge at MoMA that has like
awesome
LPs, books, CD-ROMs, and like a USB dongle.
It's like the weirdest thing.
In a not plugged in fridge, I don't think, you know, but they could fit all their stuff in a fridge.
Yeah.
And like, I like that.
I think that's really awesome.
The woman from MoMA, it was like her outgoing show because it was like 2014 that was happening and like her credits were like, I was here from 2000 to like 2013. I'm like, well, this is what I'm leaving this.
Yeah, this is part of my legacy, and you just have to deal with this fridge full of weirder art that you probably don't want to have be here.
I'm trying to remember any.
But the residents inspired that kind of loyalty.
Yeah.
And that kind of people willing to go well above and beyond to
the
be part
of Grace
it.
Note.
Yeah, right. I forgot.
It's like what they say about the Velvet Underground or something. It's like everyone who liked this band became a Silicon Valley weirdo.
I think that's how the saying goes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to remember because I was at this screening in 2015 at the film festival. So Don Hardy Jr. was there.
Yeah, the filmmaker.
Homer was there. I think the editor was there. Uh-huh. And I think either the editor, Don Hardy, was like worked in like the local NBC affiliate or something like that. So I think that's the person who did a lot of the shooting.
Sure.
But I'm trying to remember any details from that. I mean, it was a while ago. I wish I had taken some better notes.
I'd tell you, but I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a film, I think it moves pretty well. I do think like, obviously that whole 2014 tour It's just when they were filming.
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't have, they had archival for a lot of other stuff.
Right.
They have archival and the, it seems like they started shooting it around 2013 or so.
And I feel like if you are a fan, you'll get what you want out of it. Mm-hmm. But you'll probably be like, oh, why didn't they cover this, and this? Because it would be 6 hours long, dude.
Yeah.
Is the reason why. But like, if you're not a fan, I think it does a good job of telling the story while kind of omitting necessary details to keep up the the palace intrigue of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
like could you make this, could you do like a biopic, like 10 part spin-off miniseries,
yeah,
like
Netflix series
four
or something.
Weirdos from Louisiana moved to San Francisco in 1969.
I mean,
they discover a weird warehouse on Sycamore Street,
yeah,
and start making records, and you know,
you probably could, but you'd have to manufacture a whole lot of drama, I'm sure,
right,
too. Because a lot of times they were probably just doing the work, and that's not very exciting to be on the television.
I mean, it sounds like that tour would be really where
you... Yeah, it's like you spend everything on like the Mole Show tour.
Yeah.
And have that be like a season.
One of the big questions that gets asked a lot is, why did you decide to leave the Cryptic Corporation?
Money. I had to take care of myself. And business and money required reality. The residents were off on their own. They had met the real world, and I had to go on and do the same myself.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Gotta cast this dog. Cast this dog.
I was thinking about in terms of like not just casting single actors, but like what you'd have to do, like a young version and like an older version. So,
and you don't have a lot of footage to work with of what Eamon, like some weird open mic footage of them, like in 71 with like their friend whose name I jotted down.
Where they're on that open mic.
Yeah,
and,
that was pretty. There, that footage, like I still can't tell who's who. Everyone looks like my idea of like Mo from Mo's Books on Telegraph, you know.
Totally, like I think I said it already. Just like you wouldn't look at them twice in the street.
No.
Just a dude. Just a dude. Mm-hmm. Like whatever, just some guy that lives in Berkeley, you know. So I tried to think of, actually, I was going to try to do three. I was going to try to do young, middle, and old.
Okay.
I didn't really nail it.
Yeah.
So what I came up with is for the sort of middle age, well, Michael Shannon.
Oh,
for one
as?
Of them,
Jay Clem? No.
No. Fuck, I'm trying to remember which one. John Kennedy.
Kennedy.
John Kennedy.
Okay, interesting.
Right, and then John C. Reilly is Homer Flynn.
Oh.
Because I think that guy's incredibly, like, he's just sort of...
He could embody it, but they're not physically alike at all.
He's not going to look it. I'm not casting for looks. Who gives a damn what they look like, right?
Yeah.
Walton Goggins.
Oh.
For Hardy Fox.
That's an interesting choice.
And again, part of it's attitude and part of it's like presence, but I think he could pull off that
As the performer, really well. Yeah, as the performer for sure.
Well, and that dude actually is a really good actor. So that's more like a kind of like, okay, let's go down that route. And then Hank Azaria for
Jay Clem,
yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which again, I'm not going for like what they look like, because it's like I barely fucking remember what they look like, and it doesn't remember.
Yeah.
And then for older, Campbell Scott.
Oh,
which a lot of people like. Yeah, don't ever think
old
of
Campbell Scott.
Old Campbell Scott now, like he was just in the most recent season
Silver Fox.
Yeah.
Okay.
House of Cards. Which is not great, but he's great in it. Yeah. Like, and he's really great in that kind of.
He was a great actor the whole
time. He's got that gravitas. Got that presence. Mm-hmm. Scott Glenn.
Oh yeah,
who recently showed up as Stick in Daredevil, but I haven't seen him in anything in a while. And he did something else too.
And the Leftovers. Scott Glenn's in The Leftovers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think he's just got
a similar
that,
role.
He's got that kind of cranky kind of...
Oh, he has been so cranky forever.
Yeah, he's been a crank for forever.
Well, I was going to throw out also that thing from Monsters, Inc., the eyeball thing.
Yes, that's good. That's solid.
And also David Koechner, because every episode we have to bring up David Koechner is appropriate for any documentary.
It's a one size fits all. It's like a universal screwdriver.
Yeah.
And then Christopher Lloyd.
Oh. Yeah. Cool.
And Willem Dafoe.
Is Christopher Lloyd still alive? He's not acting, is all I know.
I think he is, because didn't he do like a Back to the Future thing with.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, that was like referencing the election or something.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure he is. Let me double check. I should have checked this beforehand. He's old as hell. I know that.
Yeah. This has been the Christopher Lloyd podcast. And
he's 80 years old, but he's still alive.
Oh, man.
So I'll stand by that, because like they're all old as hell, too. Yeah. And I think when you get like to white dudes, it's usually, unless they have some distinctive feature, old as old.
Christopher Lloyd is a good casting.
But largely have it as like the old residents. So you got Campbell Scott, Scott Glenn, Christopher Lloyd, and Willem Dafoe.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Pretty good.
They just should be the new residents. Just book them as the new residents.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just like, I think you've cast the new residents. I think that's all you needed.
They can keep
this.
The legacy going.
Exactly.
For that.
Yeah. I think...
I wish I knew... I was trying to think of like good character actors that are young, and I'm like, I don't know, the like kid from the freaking Maze Runner? I can't think of anything.
The new good character actors are like...
All leading.
Actually become leads.
Yeah,
like,
and they're
Timothée
all like
Chalamet,
super handsome.
Or,
I'm like, none of these are handsome dudes. It should be someone kind of like...
Ben is back or whatever, that kid, you know, Lucas Hedges or whatever his name is.
It should be someone that's kind of doofy looking, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's otherwise it's not as... And I get, you know, Campbell Scott's like a good looking dude, but he's also like, he's got that weather-beaten kind of like look to him. So like, that's what I came up with. I did put more time into it.
There are some women in this film, just to like clarify there. And there were women that were performers that were like Molly Harvey.
Yep.
She's one that toured with them. And
yep.
But yeah, it seems like it's very heavily.
It's heavily dude.
It's a heavily dude kind of show.
That didn't escape my attention too, because I was thinking about it in terms of like, well.
I mean, Kesha's barely. No. I also really like their tour manager, that guy Hein Focker.
He
just like, I was just on board and I became their tour manager. Like, that's
They seem to have a thing where just whoever was around got like,
it's a cult,
like
it's very
cult
like, yeah,
got abducted.
It's very cult
into their band.
Did you did not contribute to the Indiegogo for this?
Because
there's a huge list of credits.
Don't think I did, Indiegogo. And I don't know why. I remember that there was one. Uh-huh. I think I forgot.
Have you ever done an Indiegogo? Yeah. Have you given to Indiegogo for films?
Yes.
Yeah.
More than a few times, actually.
I would do it, but then I
gave for the Brainiac one.
Oh, you did for the Brainiac one.
The Riot Coalition one, and a couple others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in this sort of era, that's the way to do it now.
Yeah,
that's what you have to do.
It's cool, but it's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of like the modern...
Slogan. Bill Badgley was like very anti for some reason.
Yeah, I heard that that was interesting to me, because it's like, well,
you're not making a compromise in this. It's basically
kind
of like
not giving the contributors.
No, I think it was just like the way that it sort of like didn't pan out exactly.
Yeah.
But he still needed to raise the money, you know. Yeah. So I don't know.
It's first of all, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Like crowdfunding doesn't bother me at all. Like, here's how I look at it. If you don't like it, don't contribute to it.
Yeah. That's a lot of people don't.
Done. Yeah, there's plenty of stuff I don't like, and yeah. I guess what? I don't buy it.
Yeah.
No problem.
Oh, man.
But people, they get, like, pissed off about it, like, oh, it's just such a, it's internet begging. I'm like, how, you do you want this, like, cool, weird thing to happen or not? If you mm-hmm. do, contribute to it. If not, go do something else. It doesn't bother anyone. Like, it shouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't see, I don't get in my soapbox about this often, but people that are against crowdfunding, get over it. Because mm-hmm. it's, that's where we're at. Because we've destroyed these traditional models for funding for creative ventures. And whether we thought they were great or we thought they were the worst thing ever, they're gone. They're just gone. It doesn't mean like that they're, it's there's not things to replace them, but.
This is a great time to plug the SupDoc Patreon. Go to patreon.com/SupDocPodcast. And even as little as a dollar a month, you can get access to all sorts of bonus content.
Like George and I talking about file formats.
Exactly. Our file format show we're about to start. So I feel like I kind of covered most of what I wanted to cover on this film. Did you have anything you wanted to cover more?
No, I thought that was pretty good. Like I said, I think that...
You be the judge of that, audience. Was yeah. it pretty good? No.
I think it's pretty good. Yeah. But again, for me, it's almost... Like, it'd be impossible to do a comprehensive documentary on The Residence. There'd be no way to do it. And it's sort of like you're...
Like a book would be... Actually, a CD-ROM might be the best way to do it. A different format that sort of, like, could compact, like, 40 years of
because
stuff.
Because they did so much stuff, and some of it isn't the point... And I agree with the fact that some of the stuff they included, like, it isn't the content. It's that they just did it. They did it, and they did it in this you know, pioneering sort of fearless way. And I think the movie did a really good job of capturing mm-hmm. that and thus capturing the spirit of The Residence.
And like sort of DIY, completely DIY.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's funding that, you know?
Is parallel to, I don't know, not The Grateful Dead, but like pre-punk, sort of pre-punk DIY.
Building, world building. Like
yeah.
Building this world where people get to come along mm-hmm. for the ride, and they yeah. get to engage in the way that they want to engage.
Yeah.
And that has so much appeal to me. And that's ultimately whatever macrocosmic level what I try to do.
Yeah.
And you
would directly identify this as an inspiration for how
absolutely.
You want to. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a few that are the cliche joke is, oh, they're coming for us. Whenever you hear sirens in the background, it's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
So I just had to reference it, but I referenced it in a meta way, which I feel like is maybe that, not yeah, the best thing ever.
It's meta podcasting.
It's like they're yeah. not coming for you. Podcast's yeah. not interesting
yeah.
enough to violate a law. Not yours. I'm talking about in general. It's the hackiest thing. I'm like, really? Really?
My with ride's
this?
Here.
Yeah. It's fucking, come on. It's like, oh, there's no price tag on this. Must be free.
Mm.
Shut up. Stop talking.
Anyway. They're coming for our eyeballs.
So that annoyed me so much. I actually forgot what I was gonna say, but which is fine.
I was gonna say this whole talk about crowdfunding did remind me about our last segment, which is our newest segment.
Oh right, yeah,
where
yeah.
we kind of ask our guests to pitch a documentary.
Sure.
The audience can kind of decide whether they think this is something that should be made.
So good or no good.
Yeah. mine. This is just like something in the news that I'm swear. There's been so much stuff in the news about scammers and con men that mm-hmm. I can't say I love this story. There was a homeless man in Philadelphia, and supposedly he gave this woman, like, he took his last 20 bucks and bought gas for this stranded woman, right?
Oh, all right.
And then they did a GoFundMe for him. He was a homeless vet. And they raised over 400 grand.
Wow.
And then it turns out the woman and her boyfriend were kind of came up with this scam with the homeless guy. And they were supposed to split the money. But then they got a little too greedy and tried to keep... They only paid him out like less than a third.
Uh-huh.
So then he ratted the entire thing out.
Whoa.
And now they, I think, have criminal... charges of fraud against them.
Yeah, yeah.
The story is
Petty grift gone bad.
Her boyfriend Mark D'Amico and the homeless man Johnny Bobbitt Jr. And
that's a loaded name.
I think like the thing is that like he could have probably if he didn't like rat them out to GoFundMe.
Yeah,
he would have still had his cut of the money.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that these people used like a legit I mean, I think the guy is still legitimately homeless.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's weird about
it. Wow, that's...
But these guys are like, oh, we have the computer, so we can make the GoFundMe, and then we're going to pocket the majority of the money from this.
Wow.
So
many different levels going on.
There's so many. I feel like this would be... This is like the next con man documentary that I would like to see.
That sounds great. Netflix, I'd watch the hell out of that.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. And be like, how do these people know each other? What's the backstory?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think that's all been revealed yet either. But GoFundMe ends up returning a lot of the money to people. Which I didn't know that they would do. I feel like if it isn't
used for the stated purpose, I believe, then they have in their terms of service that it has to be returned. Yeah.
I'm going to retract what I said about the SupDoc Patreon. It's mostly for cat food. So
let's buy George some it's and some cat food.
So that's my pitch for a... I can see it now. I haven't come up with the name yet, but you know, like, I'm not the producer, so yeah.
I like seeing stuff about people on the grift.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what's so interesting about it.
Did you watch the Fyre Festival docs?
No, I'm gonna actually.
I guess you're kind of like been busy hanging out with rock stars. So,
believe it or not, I'm actually gonna watch it tonight. We already decided on that earlier. Like, because I bet I'm gonna be angry the entire time, but I'll watch the shit out of that.
Yeah,
of
yeah. I've watched both of them, and I think we're doing an episode about it. Yeah, there's one Hulu dropped. Theirs on the Monday before the Netflix one was going to drop Friday.
That is a Hall of Fame dick move.
Yeah. So, like, classic. That's like, beyond, like, yeah, like, yeah. And, like, the fact that this kind of bidding war is happening with documentaries.
Yeah.
It
could be good for the art form.
It could be two films about the homeless scam, you know, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. Have a competing film.
Yeah.
And then, oof.
So what do you got a topic?
Well, yeah, nothing so esoteric. Well, actually more esoteric, I suppose. But I was actually talking about this morning, which is funny when you brought up this newer bit, that I had this idea, and I've had it bounce around my head for a couple of years now, that with the Conan Neutron, the Secret Friends material, it's all written fairly quickly. So I have this idea that over the course of a month, I would do a documentary where week of it's like writing songs. The next week is arranging and recording songs, then mixing and mastering the songs, and at the same time learning the songs to play them. And for the last week, it's rehearsing for the show and getting the production. I guess it probably have to be CDs. Vinyl takes too long. And then at the end of the month is a record release show for a record that didn't exist at the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is interesting because that part of the process, if you're in a band, you're like, yeah, whatever. That's not, you know, who cares? But like the idea of like actually going through each piece of the process and talking to people that are, you know, more well-known, you know, defined famous, but like famous indie rock, famous musicians about, you know, what do you tell us about writing a record? What are, you know, tell us about mixing a record? What's the most important things about mastering a record? What about, you know, just going through and like getting those pieces of and getting that context. Mm-hmm. And specifically, like, showing each piece of the process, not as, like...
You're kind of, like, Spurlock your own process.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Yeah. Except for without eating McDonald's, we make a record.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about
Super
Morgan
debt
Spurlock,
me.
But totally. Exactly, right? But it would be less about, my music and my art so much as just a celebration of, like, the process and, like, the pieces of it. Because what I found... weirdly to me is that piece of it. Some people are fascinated by it. They want to know about it. I'm like, oh, what do you want to talk about?
I want to watch a mastering session on vinyl.
I mean,
no, that doesn't get filmed very often.
Yeah. Like, and so I haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. And if it existed in a movie, great. But like everyone focuses on this like dumb behind the music style arc. And like, I'm interested in the sort of yeoman like work ethic with it, where you're just like, no, this is doing the work. It looks like this. Like this.
You don't want the throwing the TVs off the balcony.
I'm
gonna be doing some ledgers. Gonna be like reconciling some Google Docs,
designing labels and to put on the records, and like, you know, picking album art and like, do we include lyrics or do we not? Like stuff like that. Stuff that like the only thing I've seen like
it's
that
like
is
like a Frederick Wiseman talk, but your band.
But, right, but you get to see it with visuals, and yeah. You know, it'll not to sound like a dick, but it'll be entertaining because mm-hmm. You know, it's like they'll be like, well, and the, so the conceit of it is that the whole album is a rumination on the passing of time mm-hmm. as well, like the lyrical matter and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So it'll be funny, and it'll also be like, is this gonna happen? Like there'll be that sort of like, because I don't know, I've never tried to do something on that level.
Yeah,
maybe I'll fail, and maybe there'll be a documentary about me failing.
This is kind of reminding me. So that's your pitch.
That's the pitch because
the nuts and bolts DIY.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts, but like top to bottom, a record does not exist at the beginning of the month. At the end of the month, it not only exists, it exists in some physical form, and there's a show of it.
Yeah,
like a live show where it is released. Yeah. Of the thing that did not exist at the beginning of the month. National Writing Month.
National
Like
Writing
something
Month,
like
yeah.
that with records. Mm-hmm. I know they did a 33 RPM.
It's like a songs of the day, song a day. People
yeah,
have done that.
But
that's
this
a
is
different,
different from that.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is going through each piece of the process and just kind of laying it bare and showing people that maybe don't know what it looks like.
And then part of this is you fly from Milwaukee to here.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Yeah, yeah and like you get to see... Part of the story is the crazy way that we do things, which is pretty nuts and works for us. Mm-hmm. But like, can I recommend it? No.
Like permanent long distance relationship band.
Yeah,
essentially.
I mean, yeah, basically. Yeah. But I think that would be interesting because I haven't seen that. I mean, if it exists, like, Christ, sign me up because I find that kind of stuff interesting, and I think you can tell a story. Without even having the focus be on the art, but just have like the journey be the destination.
Yeah, I can sort of see someone like if you were trying to pitch it to a network, they'd be like, but where's the competition aspect?
Right.
Where's the gamification?
Yeah.
It's like, well, it'll just be a thing that's on Bandcamp. It's not going to.
Yeah,
know,
I mean.
There's no like ultimate. There's no like, you know, final two men enter, one man leave scenario.
Yeah, the story is that. I'm like the stand-in for the every man or every woman, mm-hmm. like frustrated musician or disillusioned musician of just like finding that like some of the roadblocks you put up are ones that you put up for yourself.
Yeah.
And again, harkening back to the resonance that sometimes it isn't a matter of if it's going to be this perfectly actualized vision, it's mm-hmm. just doing it.
Yeah.
And like being confident enough to just go and do it. And for me, what I found is that the art got better when I sort of just decided that fear didn't go away. I just stopped listening to it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, this is the one. Everyone's mm-hmm. nobody cares about this one.
Yeah.
Or nobody cares more, I should say. But, but it's occurred to me because people have said to me that like that part of it and the fact that I still make records, I still tour. Whereas a lot of people dipped out and maybe they come back or yeah. like didn't come back. And then
I'm not coming back.
Yeah. And it's, you know what? It's not for everyone. Yeah. That's fine. But like people have like, not to be cheeseball, but people have like bought amps and started playing again after seeing us play. And like, mm-hmm. what does that mean? I don't know, but it doesn't mean it's more than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm like obsessed with this idea of like showing this piece of the process is because I think it's interesting and because I think it could legitimately be something that like people connect with.
Right. Like you wouldn't do like the old school is like the Simple Machines Guide to Putting Out Records. You just
no.
do it now as like a, you know, a tutorial or something.
I know what works
yeah.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually guarantee you it won't work for a lot of people, mm-hmm. but I can show what works for me mm-hmm. and I can show that I'm full of like self-doubt, like all the time. You know, like this new record that we're recording on Thursday is a concept record about like depression and mental health. There's like imposter complex in there.
Oh, man.
You know,
well, you really got two guys in there.
Yeah.
This is only. Yeah, this is so deep of a cut. I want to.
But that's the idea. Anyway, yeah. So this is why I'm bad at pitching things, because, like, whatever. It's supposed to be, like, 30 seconds or something. Right? But, like.
Your elevator pitch. Yeah.
My elevator pitch needs some more. But this is, like.
It's cool. It's a tall building we're going up.
Exactly.
It kind of reminds me. I wanted to bring up this idea that I never did. But my concept back when, like, the Chemos days, you know.
Yeah.
When there was just basically, like, a very low bar to have a show.
Mm-hmm.
I had a concept for a show.
Hey, I just walked in the door. Cool. Want a show? I'm done.
The concept of the show was.
Yep, I do.
It was a three
Can
band.
Can I sell this crack here?
Yeah.
No, you can't. All right.
Yeah. Who's now in charge of? There's now the old Nightlight is now the new elbow room. So yeah, Matt's spot. It was gonna be three bands. It was basically gonna be a play in the form of three bands.
All right.
And the first band was gonna be called Audition.
Okay.
And then we would just basically have a play that was. We pull someone out of the crowd and then they audition for the band.
Okay.
And the second band would be called Practice. And we would just do a practice.
Do a practice in front of everybody.
As a band.
Okay.
And then the third stage would be the band. So that's basically.
That's funny.
Similar.
That's good. Yeah.
In a way to what you're talking
about. But like a live show version.
I never wrote it.
Yeah.
It was like, I had the idea. It's like a lot of things that I did in my youth. It's like, I had the idea.
Yeah.
And I never wrote it.
So yeah, and what I've become very inspired by bands like The Residents and The Melvins is you have the crazy idea, but then you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you make sure it's a crazy idea you want to do. Like you can have.
I could still do this idea.
Yeah, that's an idea you could do tomorrow.
And I could just do it at Dynasty Typewriter.
Yeah.
And just have a backing. Have a. I need to build up.
I can picture it now.
Play noises off. Have you ever seen that play?
I don't know.
It's kind of like basically it'll be like a play. That's a play about people putting on a play, but then the middle scene is the middle act is you can see the back of the set and all of the physical comedy that's happening behind the scenes
as like part
and
of
then the third
that's cool.
scene. Is it basically is noises off. I just realized this just now. It's
as
noises
you're
off,
talking
but
it out.
It's a band. Yeah. But like then so by the time you see the third scene, you're seeing it from the audience perspective, but you know what all the beats are. That
right,
are happening
right. Because they've told you what
it's
so
and it's about and it's basically about loops and like it's like Westworld because it's like doing a play is just like loops, right? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah. It's like so and it's but I can still first see it like the practice part of it where like oh yeah, she's like this, and then like, oh yeah, kinda, but like kinda not wanting
to. I mean, we can workshop this idea.
Like not wanting to be too negative in that way that like when you have a new band or something, you don't want to be too negative.
Yeah.
But you're like, that's not it. But like I don't want to tell you that's not it. So I'm just gonna like say like euphemize it in a certain way.
I'm just glad I'm saying it on mic
that's
right
funny.
Now. So Fred Armisen can't steal it.
Yes, exactly.
Not to say I should rephrase that. If Fred Armisen happens to do the same thing.
Watch your ass, Armisen.
It wouldn't be theft, it would be independently arriving at it. I'm just basically this is podcasting is essentially like the old school version of like writing
copyright.
An idea
and putting it in mail with yourself. Yeah, yeah.
So like
yeah.
I got a post-it mark stamp on it. Well, Conan.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This has been great.
And check out Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends.
Yep.
On Bandcamp.
NeutronFriends.bandcamp.com, NeutronFriends.com
yeah.
as well, which is mostly just like here's the tour dates and like the same thing you can find on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
We got a thing on Facebook. Nobody looks at it. I don't look at it. Yeah, I'm really selling it.
Let's get off of Facebook, everyone.
But I'm on Instagram and Twitter, Conan Neutron, if you want to hit me up.
And Theory of Obscurity, a film about the Residents.
Film about the Residents.
The only film about the Residents
that I'm aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, until we make a CD-ROM about the Residents.
It's coming back.
All right.
Cassettes give me to come back. CD-ROMs are next.
Exactly. Check out my refrigerator when we're done with this. All right. Thanks a lot, Conan.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scovel.
If you want us to cover a doc, have suggestions for guests, or you just want to reach out, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.